Good evening. Breaking news today. The long-running podcast, The Worst Guide to Living in Austria podcast, has apparently called it quits. Yes, due to a rift between the band members, Jacob Moss and Gabriel Schaffler, the podcast is sadly splitting up. We've got our hands on part of the argument that went down between the two.
Here I am calling you back, man. And you fucking hang up on me. You're always whinging, you never call me back when you say you're gonna call me back. And then I call you back and you fucking hang up on me. Who the fuck do you think you are, man? It's disrespect, man. Can't believe you would do something like that, man. Sorry, I'm eating peanut butter sandwich. But the point is, it's disrespect, man. I call you, I want you to fucking answer the phone. It's good peanut butter sandwich. And look, when you answer the phone to me, I want you to show me gratitude. Gratitude that I called you, not this fucking, you never call me back. This bullshit, man. Fucking bullshit. Had enough of this shit, man. Get yourself a fucking new podcast host. That's right. Somebody that doesn't eat peanut butter sandwiches while they're making a voice message to you. Bitch.
Yes, disturbing for many reasons, mainly because he had his mouth full and was chomping away on a peanut butter sandwich during the riff that he was going on about Gabriel Schaffler and their forever conflict over who calls who back. Yeah, just kidding.
Oh my god!
Yo, TWG! G
safe gang.
Yo, der eine aus Australien, der andere aus Wien.
TWG
Jacob und Gabriel spitten hier im Beef. Der eine redet schlechtes Englisch, der andere scheiß Deutsch. Wir spitten hier die Rhymes so fresh, komm verschwind ganz schnell, sonst clasht's. TWG represent.
Gabriel is just on holidays, and here I am in the studio on my lonesome, which is probably a good thing because I'm sweating a lot. It's very hot in Vienna, as is the rest of Europe. I've got a fan on me, but essentially what the fan is doing is making the sweat travel around my body, so it's really not doing much. But welcome, TVG gang, to a special episode, and I do say special because I'm going to try something a bit different today. So I thought I would use this opportunity to discuss something that I've been noticing is a bit of a pattern amongst us who are not born here in Austria, but live here and love it here. And feel free to write to us and get in touch if you're feeling the same on this topic. Sorry, just hiccup there. Or sending us, even better, send us a voice message on Instagram, because this might make you feel a little less alone with this whole feeling or this thing I've noticed with those foreigners living here in Vienna and Austria. So you know what I don't get about Austria? The whole like knocking on the table thing when somebody does something great. I mean, you finish the presentation or someone says something clever in a meeting or a professor delivers a lecture or even somebody does an awesome trick on a skateboard. Okay, maybe I'm stretching it a bit there. But instead of applauding, everyone just goes, on the table. Like, it's not even clapping. It's not cheering. It's not even like a polite, well done, old chap. It's like, I feel like it's very restrained applause, as if the applause is constipated, you know? Like, it's praise. Like, people are saying, well done, well done. But it's applause with furniture, you know? It's like somebody's clapping with furniture involved. And the more I think about it, and they call this here in Austria the Akademische Klopfen, which is a very restrained, I guess, maybe coming from the Habsburg days, I don't know, where clapping was seen as something ape-like, I guess, because I've often thought it's quite a random thing that we do, that we slap our hands together when somebody does something good, like a seal. But to be honest, the whole world does it, but Austria, and I've also heard Germany does this Klopfen thing, which I found fascinating. And the more I think about it, the more I think this might be the most Austrian thing ever, right? Because it says, essentially it's saying, we approve of you, we approve of what you've done, but let's not get carried away. Let's go to the point where we're slapping our hands together and hooting into the room, hoo, 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 kind of thing. So it's essentially the antithesis of the whole Anglo-Saxon world, where everything is pretty much over the top celebrated. No, I wouldn't say that, but... And that's what I thought I would do this episode about, kind of. Not the knocking, not really. It's more about this, like, this feeling I've noticed a lot of people get here, especially if they're creative people, if they're ambitious, if they're loud, if they're chaotic, if they're affectionate, or if they're maybe just those kind of people that are just a bit too much alive after 10 p.m. or before 10 a.m., that Vienna kind of turns the volume down on them. They feel like Vienna turns the volume down on them. I mean, this is inspired, like I said, by a pattern I've been noticing in a lot of conversations I have with people that are not born here. And so I thought I would do this episode a bit different. It's a bit more personal. It's kind of like a diary entry that many of us not born here could have written, right? And I'm calling the episode, Does Vienna Shrink You? So I've had this conversation with a few people lately. And I started noticing it when a mate of mine, and he's a German, right? So we'll add that layer in a sec. But he said to me once where he was like, I just can't in Vienna. I don't feel like I belong. I feel like Vienna shrinks me. And this was such a slap in the face for me, because the way he worded it, shout out, you know who you are, the way he worded it was such a well-articulated way to describe how many people feel in this city. And he wasn't talking about his career or his bank account. He was really talking about his personality and who he is, you know. He was kind of describing how he feels like it restricts his sense of potential, or it restricts his potential and also his sense of possibility. And then I had this discussion. I had the same discussion. I reckon I've had the same discussion in different wording with about six different people. And there was this other guy who, very successful dude, who just got back from Berlin. And he sounded really dispirited and disappointed to be back. I'm not sure if he listens to the podcast, so I'm not going to do a shout out to him. But he just got back from Berlin, and this wasn't some like 23-year-old where, you know, they missed going out in Berghain or all these cliches, or like Vienna's too quiet and too boring, which it's not. It's not boring at all. But he was a guy that had built companies, sold startups, achieved big things. He was essentially just like one of these Labrador people like myself, you know, like Labrador meaning that you wake up and you're happy to see everybody, or a golden retriever. And he was just describing this feeling where he said, Vienna feels small, right? And so then I was starting to ask myself this question, which specifically relates to people living here, who, like, a lot of people have expressed this to me in different ways. Can a city do that? can a city shrink a person? Like, especially like a beautiful, comfortable city like Vienna, can it make you quietly less yourself? And that's what this episode is about. And I found this, I remembered this quote specifically from Winston Churchill, who's not Austrian at all, but he, amongst other things, did have some wise words. And he said, we shape our buildings, thereafter they shape us, right? And my take on that is, if the buildings shape us, what does a city of like thick Altbau, closed courtyards with signs on them saying, you can't play here, lots of signs all over the city, heavy doors and rules about Ruhezeiten plastered on every bar window. What does that do to a person, you know? Also in the apartments and stuff we live in. They're not social places, even though Vienna has put a lot into, especially in the social housing stuff, really trying to create housing that is social, that does connect neighbors. And that might be happening. And if it is, please write in if you're one of those people that have a place where you live where it feels social, in Vienna or Austria in general. And when I first thought about it, I was thinking, is this a Vienna-specific thing? Or do other people living in other places say the same, right? So most people that I hear say something like this, like, I left because it felt too small. They're people from country towns. They talk like this all the time, right? They said, I had to leave because everyone knew who I was before I knew who I was, you know, kind of thing. But Vienna isn't a country town, right? Vienna is not a dorf. Everybody, you hear this often, Vienna is a dorf. This is not true. Even though you do meet people regularly that you know, it's usually because your bubble has a lot of overlap, right? It's still the second largest German-speaking city in Europe, right? I mean, of course, it's small compared to a place like London, right? But why compare Vienna to London or Berlin, for that matter? Why compare it all? Says the guy with the average-sized penis, right? But I told you it's a diary entry, so we get very intimate. But the point is, Vienna doesn't... I don't think Vienna feels small because it is small. Vienna feels small because its social circles are really tight and hard to get into. And its institutions are old and feel guarded. A lot of things feel guarded here and unwelcoming. And its approval systems, like as in... when people approve of something or of you, when that happens, because they have this strong, like, which we'll talk about a bit later, this envy culture, this Neidkultur, which Viennese and Austrians speak about a lot. It's very subtle when they approve of something, right? They don't go out of their way to compliment it. I did have somebody do that recently where somebody wrote, hey, I really liked that content series that you did. Like, this was for the agency. She was in the agency world. Doris, shout out, awesome, talented woman in the marketing realm. And she wrote to me and said, I love it. I think it was really cool and great for the industry. And I was really like, whoa, that had such an impact on me because it doesn't happen regularly. So it's not population small, but I feel like it's, how to describe this? It's psychologically small. It feels small. It has the all the assets of something small, but it also has all the things that make a big city. It is cosmopolitan in what it offers. You know, you can eat all the kinds of cuisines. You can get different culture if you want it. But yeah, maybe comparing Vienna to London or Berlin is already the wrong way to do it. I think cities like Berlin or London, they expand you because they feel overwhelming. And I really feel like in London, there's a place for everybody to be who they want to be because it's so big. There's so many people and you can get lost in that and just be yourself. And I feel like Vienna also expands you, but slowly. And I feel like it does that by forcing you to become something specific, if you know what I mean. So yeah, I think Vienna isn't a village. It's not a dwarf. It's a capital city with this kind of village consequences. In a real village, everyone knows your grandmother. In Vienna, everyone knows someone who wants freelance for that ex-client, and they have opinions about this and that. And, you know, you date this person that dated your cousin. And yeah, I just feel like it has those kind of aspects to it, or characteristics to it. Vienna is also comfortable. So, and comfortable can often be like, act like a sedative, something that makes you stagnate. I mean, when you think about it, we watch Netflix and all these series, and we set up, like, we watch all this stuff or game because it's comforting. And this sort of stuff, where we passively consume something, means that we are less active in our life, or we have less time to be active, right? Which, none of these are bad things, right? I also don't think it's bad that Vienna is comfortable, but I think it does lead to us not being so active in the city, because it doesn't have a lot of friction. It functions with its rules, which is very evident in times like these, where a lot of cities and a lot of places don't feel like it's functioning. I mean, and this is a good thing. I think this can be used as a frame, as a space to be yourself. So Vienna is safe, it's beautiful, it's affordable compared to many other big cities. It's culturally rich, you can get the inspiration you need here. But the danger is that the comfort takes away the ambition. And I think that's one of the big factors there. I'm kind of breaking down cliches here and trying to workshop the idea of, is it Vienna making us shrink, or is it us kind of taking our hands off the wheel kind of thing? The other thing I was thinking about, which is a cliche, is that Austrians are well known, and this is not my opinion, this is a general opinion, that Austrians are negative. So they are cynics, as a default setting. And I generally find that to be only when they need a defense mechanism. So I don't find Austrians to be cynical by default. I think they just use it as a coping mechanism or as a defense mechanism, because I think it protects them here in their comfortable existence. They're not this American-style LinkedIn optimism, I'm so humbled by this. They're allergic to this. And this is one part I really like about them. It's kind of a no-schmarrn, no-bullshit way of seeing the world. And I think for creatives, cynicism can really extinguish. I think for creatives, cynicism can really extinguish a lot of fire and passion that people have. You'll often hear, when you have an ambitious person in the room, if they're confident enough, they will set the room on fire, and they will stand out because there's just not that many like you would find in a city like London or Berlin. But if they're not as confident, then they will shrink in a room where people, at the same time as where you're pitching or talking about an idea, or wouldn't it be crazy if we did this kind of thing, where the volume is turned down by the others in the room. And I think we are highly influenced by the people we hang around with. So I think this might be another factor. I don't think Austrians are hating your ideas or whatever you're saying or your opinions. I think they're just allergic to enthusiasm, or too much enthusiasm, unless they give you permission to do it. I think this is in specific cases where enthusiasm is okay. most enthusiasm I see in Austrians is when they get stuck in a rant in their dialect. I love watching that. This is one of the reasons I love watching that, because this is really general stuff as well. Like, a lot of Austrians don't fit in this mold, and I apologize ahead for those that don't. But this is kind of just me unpacking things out loud, so a lot of it might be schmarrn, bullshit. I really like this quote. I was looking up, I did a bit of research for this, because there's a few things I talk about after that relate to the research. But There was a guy, Karl Kraus. I don't know if you know him, writer. But he said, in Berlin, things are serious but not hopeless. In Vienna, they are hopeless but not serious. And that, I think, describes Vienna very well. It feels like nothing is taken seriously. And this is where this, once again, and I know I talk about it a lot, but I think I've only talking about it a lot recently because I'm really fascinated by it, because it's similar to the Australian no worries approach, this Schauermal Bastion culture. They do feel like they can't change anything and things are the way they are because that's the way they've always been, you know. Haben wir schon immer so gemacht, or whatever the saying goes. But they take it lightly. They take it lightheartedly. And that's a nice little relief valve that I think is good to play with when you're feeling this kind of, that they shrink you kind of thing. Or the Austria or Vienna shrinks you. Yeah, and the other cliche that I wanted to point to, and I don't think it's a cliche, I do think it's real, especially when so many people, Austrians, point it out. This is not a thing I observed as a foreigner or a person not born here. I saw it, heard it from so many Austrians, this Neidkultur. This is a big one. So this is not just envy, like as in Neidkultur, so Neid is envy, but it's not just about people being envious of you, but rather don't be standing too tall. Don't be too loud and proud about it. Don't shine too loudly. And don't make others, like, don't show off, essentially. And this is very true in Austria. People don't respond well to those that are acting loud and that are out there about their successes. This is certainly not something endearing here. They prefer humbleness and, you know, talking yourself, just people that talk themselves down or take the piss out of them. Like, I think this is true in every culture, but self-deprecation, so taking the piss out of yourself, is the most loved kind of comedy here. But yeah, this Neidkultur, I guess, in some places, when people see you succeed, they would ask, how did you do it? Like, wow, that's really crazy. But in Vienna, they kind of react, or Austria, they kind of react like, who does this person think they are, you know, if you're loud about it. So this is a big thing, but it's a very interesting thing. And that kind of thing would make people shrink, right? If people aren't reacting well to, hey, I just did this. And then there's the last one. So there's this famous expression by, just on that Neidkultur, like this is, this relates to also that, somebody once said to me when we were writing the book, look, you can be gay, but do it quietly, you know, in Austria. And that I found to be a very good description on how, flamboyancy and charisma is dealt with here. But yeah, then there's also the point that Vienna, it resists change, right? It does push back against change and new things. And I think that is sometimes a good thing, that they hesitate and they move at a slower pace, because we're seeing the opposite in many parts of the world where they move fast and break things fast. And repairing things aren't always possible along the way. So this kind of moving at an Austria pace, I really like that here. I think we're living in an age where everything is moving so fast that it's good to live in a place where things are moving slower. But this resistance to change psychologically, this is really limiting, I think, a lot of things here. Like, it's kind of a contradiction. Vienna can feel conservative. Specifically Vienna in this case can feel conservative, passive aggressive, and allergic to things new, but it's also a city that in the past has been such a big part in radical change, in terms of societal change, in terms of innovation in art, in psychoanalysis, in architecture, in culture in general, philosophical. So yeah, that was Karl Kraus, the same guy, Karl Kraus, The same guy had this perfect line that describes it, where it's the streets of Vienna are paved with culture, the streets of other cities with asphalt. And this is like describing old Vienna, right? It's not the case today, I would say, even though it has a lot of cultural festivals and it really does try to position itself there. I think a lot of the time it's living off its past reputation. And I think it's too obsessed with its past reputation to move forward. Whereas I think a lot of its past could be used as inspiration for moving forward as being a powerhouse for these kind of things. And I think that's important, like moving into the age where we're going, and this might be just bullshit. I don't know what, I'm just talking off the cuff here, but I think this is really important going forward into an age where intelligence has been democratized by AI. We're all going to have to find our place and what we're really skilled at and what we have good taste in. And I think that same thing applies for cities and countries. You can really focus on what are we good at? What do we have a fascination for? What do we have a history and heritage in? And how can we really go all in on that going forward? And I think Vienna could really do that with, in terms of its humanist social housing, social living kind of fascination that it's had in its history and it's still doing today, which I find fascinating. And also in its cultural in the cultural arena, I think Vienna can really have a renaissance in these areas still. To be honest, when I think about this and when I hear this from people, it's often my reaction to when people point the finger at social media, even though I see their point, right? Their points are valid, but they point at social media and they say it's bad for you and the algorithms and the billionaires that own them are the fuckers that we have to take down. And I think about that, and when I hear about that, I think to myself, fuck, when do we all give up our agency? When do we all say, okay, we have no control, we are helpless, we are powerless. It's everything, there's always an external thing to blame, right? And this is really not some hard or tough love kind of talk. It's really like, I thought to myself, why are we disempowering ourselves like that? I think maybe we're giving Vienna too much power when we say this city shrinks us, or Austria, this country shrinks us. I think there's a danger here, because when we say Vienna shrunk me, we make Vienna too powerful and we're too passive in this equation. We become victims of a city that has excellent public transport and has the best sausages in the world, in my opinion. But I'm thinking maybe Vienna didn't shrink us. Maybe our enjoyment of this, the comfort of Vienna and the many other factors which aren't so enjoyable have led to us falling into this trap of it shrinking us. We've outsourced the permission for us to be big and confident and be ourselves. And I think the city has a psychology. Yes, I think that's true. I think we can often get captured in the Vienna Grant and all of these things I've described before, but we do too. We have a psychology as well, and we have agency over that. And anybody that's a foreigner in a city, they would know this feeling like, you know, you kind of have a feeling for most of your time here that you're a guest, right? Even if you've been living here 8 years, 9 years, you feel like you have to have this polite, the polite manners of a guest, right? And I think, to be honest, I think that's even harder for Germans. And I mean this really genuinely, like not a lot of people have sympathy or empathy for Germans. But when I see a German in a group of Austrians, I do have sympathy and empathy for them, because they are the only group that can, everybody can be racist towards and pick on their cultural background and their origin without being, you know, shot down for it, because obviously in Austria racism is a very sensitive thing, and nobody does it publicly. They might do it behind closed doors, but in a room of a bunch of people, it's generally not done because it's so frowned upon because of the history. But Germans get ripped into like it's a sport in Austria, like, and I understand why, because it's like this small, like everybody always compares it like a small brother, big brother. But even a fucking big brother at some point gets tired of getting picked on, you know. And but yeah, after a while, I think it is harder for Germans, and I really think there is a serious German racism problem in Austria. When you go to Germany, they don't have this towards the Austrians either. That's something to note. And I don't think it's because they disregard Austria. I think they have a great love for Austria. I think it's just, once again, these Austrians, is maybe the Neidkultur, or maybe Austrians don't think enough of themselves to be doing it. I don't know. I'm not going to psychoanalyze a whole country, but it's a fascinating thing, and I think it's harder. But yeah, at some point, you're not a guest anymore. And I think you have to make that switch at some point that you live here. You are not under the control of the place where you live, or the people that are naturally born here, but you pay the taxes. You have as much agency and control over your life and to design your life as everybody else here. And I know this is said easier for those that are in a privileged position to be, you know, have come from a middle class background or a country that has a good position or a foundation for them to leap from. You know what I'm talking about. I'm one of them, right? But I think this applies to all of us that, you know, taking the control at some point and saying, okay, I'm not a guest here. I'm actually at home here. Especially if you plan to stay here, is important. And me personally, I don't know. I don't feel like Vienna shrinks me. I don't feel like Austria shrinks me. I feel annoyed sometimes when I get this rough treatment that sometimes you get on the streets here or from a random person. Or like the other day, I was helping out with the parent committee at the school that my kid goes to. And one woman just got so pissed at me because I said, don't pick up that bag of cans because it's dripping everywhere, like the drinks, beer, whatever. And she got so angry with me. She was so pissed because she felt like I was telling her what to do. And I was like, no, okay. She's like, no, I've got to take these cans. They're mine. I'm like, okay, don't worry. I didn't know, you know, kind of thing. And there's a lot of these conflicts, these mini conflicts, that happen like this, that really agitate and make you feel like, fuck, I love this city, I love this country, but why do they have to have these little uptight, you know? Tension is always boiling on the surface in Vienna and Austria, and I feel like that's something that's frustrating. But I don't feel like it shrinks me. I feel like I survived Vienna and Austria because I'm not because I'm some go-getter or like some fucking motivational LinkedIn wanker. I think I survived here because I'm like a donkey, actually. So the opposite of a motivational LinkedIn wanker. I really feel like I'm a donkey sometimes. And that's because of, in my nature, for some reason, I have this like, as if I have blinkers on. You know, the blinkers that horses wear, these covers over their eyes so they can only see going forward. It's naivety, it's ignorance, it's like this default setting of optimism. I really just keep walking in the same direction, and sometimes even into things. And anybody that knows me will like confirm that. Like, I walk into things a lot, but and I think I was too ignorant to understand the signals, you know, or to feel this Neidkultur and to feel this negativity. It didn't really affect me because of that donkey kind of way I am. And so when people give me this skepticism, it kind of fuels me. I'm kind of like, okay, a donkey that gets a kick up the ass, and I'm like, all right, keep on going in that direction because the path is clear. Nobody else is doing it, you know? And so, because I've heard often what I'm doing here, And not to say that it's anything big, but what I'm doing here is, I've often heard from people that won't work here, you know, or I often have heard no, but often no for me here. I've learned to say, and that's one of the lessons I've learned that I'm sharing here. Anywhere that you hear a no here in Austria, then take it as a maybe later, right? And persist, because it often is the case. And I thought I'd come with a few things that I've kind of reflected on of why I think, or what helps me not be shrunk here, or not stop being myself, or to stop being myself. I don't stop being myself. You get it, right? So there's a couple of things I do that I realized in reflection. And this is unsolicited advice. So, I mean, if you're still listening to this thing, it must be interesting for you. But I think this is what this is all about. Like, the community, there's a lot of internationals in the community that I'm speaking to right now. And I think our community is all about sharing this kind of insider knowledge. So I'm doing it now. So one thing I often do is I take the piss out of any opposition. So I kind of make a joke out of it. So whenever I get this cynicism, energy, I don't fight it. I'm not like going to tell the other person, fuck off, I'm going to show you. I kind of just laugh at it and smirk at it. And so I process it into a joke. And because then it doesn't feel like I have to do this to show them. It's more like, what do they know, kind of thing. The other thing I have often done, or I've learned to, and I'm not sure if this is because I come from a country with a good branding, is I've embraced my foreigner status here. So as an Australian, but as a foreigner in general. So I don't often tell people straight away I'm from Australia, even though I used to use that a lot, because it's always a good entry point to people loving you, because Australia's got great branding, kangaroos, koalas, surfing. But I often, I like being an outsider. I've been an outsider my whole life, so I'm comfortable in this role. So this gives me straight up permission to misunderstand the rules, that I'm not from here, you know. Like, it was so funny when a lawyer had to defend a case, because we did this wine brand, right, at the agency, and we didn't put all the labeling, wasn't exact, right? And then the Weinkeller, there's a Weinkeller Controller Abteilung for the city, right, which is crazy. It has this whole department. This guy comes along into the office, and anyway, he checks it all out, and turns out that we're missing a few things in the labeling, right? So we get a fine, or like we get a court case out of it. And my lawyer actually argues, hey, he's from Australia. In Australia, the laws aren't so strict. Give him a break, you know. Like, so I found it so funny, and because it was so in line with how I normally deal with it. So here I'm kind of like, okay, being a foreigner is not a disability. It's your advantage. Use it. And it doesn't matter where you come from. You are exotic. And a lot of people in Austria haven't traveled to a lot of the places that foreigners come from. So use that, because that makes you interesting here. And then my other kind of thing I've really learned to is I've learned German. I'm not like, I can't recite Shakespeare in German. Like, my German is not fucking perfect. It's always a work in progress. I work in it. I can have a conversation in it. So don't be focused on learning perfect German. So learn useful German, right? So the stuff you can use in a regular conversation on the street, in conversations at a party, in the workplace, in any social situation, and learn the colloquial terms that will get you out of every situation, like Oida, Pastron, all these sort of things, because this makes you feel like you went to the Austrian, so people that grew up here, and this makes sense, because when I think about it, it's the same for me. When somebody not from Australia talks to me in with an Australian accent and uses the same slang, I mean, I haven't lived there for a long time, but you feel like they belong here, right? And this also gives you confidence and a sense of belonging here. Use the fucking language that makes you belong here through speaking their language, right? That's a good one. And don't obsess about being perfect in German. Just fucking speak it. And Austrians love, they're very open to helping you, you know, like, as in you can always say, wie heißt das auf Deutsch? Like, this is your Karte to making them feel empowered to help you out. And that's always a good way to do it as well. That's not for the Germans. The Germans will have to kind of adapt their slang and their dialect to fit in here. But you know what? I wouldn't suggest doing that. But, you know, it depends what position you're in. And then another one is I've really put a lot of effort into understanding Austrians. And I'm really trying to do that from a position. I mean, everybody judges, but I try not to judge them. When I capture, like I often do, and then I'll catch myself saying, okay, I'm judging them right now. Why are they like this? You know, they're like, so Austrians are shaped like all of us by their history, by their bureaucracy, by their Catholic guilt, by their social democracy, by their families, by war trauma. Like, I think that's a big thing about that creates the psyche here, by the rules that they've grown up with. And by what their parents have raised them with, just like all of us. So I really put a lot of energy into trying to understand that. And that explains a lot of things behind the scenes, which makes me actually feel like, that's why that is. So when I am confronted with a situation where I'm like, fuck, I wish it was more like home, I'm like, no, I'm in Austria. I'm not at home, right? And I need to live in the world that I'm in while adding my flavor to it. And always remember that I think for people in Austria and especially Vienna, they're really starving for people that are bringing ideas, life, warmth, humor, connection. It's like this place, the Austrians have got plenty of characters on their own, but you can add to that. And even if that's not the case, having this outlook on it helps you be yourself more. So, and I just wanted to say one more thing, like Vienna specifically has been a place filled with loud and colorful trailblazing characters before. And I think this is where it gets really hard to understand. Like when you look in Vienna's history, it's always been this contradiction, a city that is like, I mean, Vienna is a contradiction. It worships past genius while being suspicious of like living geniuses or living creatives or living people that challenge the norm. I mean, it's had Freud, Klimt, Schiele, Luce, Wittgenstein. I've got a list in front of me, as you've noticed. Mahler, Schönberg, Popper, Schrödinger. There's so many people that have like thought differently, that have lived in Vienna. And it was a nurturing ground for these kind of people. Around like Vienna around the 1900s is like described as a major center of modernism in art, psychology, and so forth. And this is the thing. So when you think that Vienna is a place that shrinks people, history is like, walks in the door and says, actually, no, it's not the case. Vienna has been a place of great inspiration for decades. And so it was like always a pressure cooker for people that think, Querdenker, they call them in German, which is a fantastic word. And we would call them, what would we call them? Out of the box thinkers, you know. And like, just think of also, there was this period in Vienna. So after the First World War, when the empire had collapsed and everything should have become really depressing, Vienna did something actually really radical. It was Red Vienna. So this period is a fascinating period. There's a couple of good books on it. Go check them out. I haven't got the names in my head, right? But the city started asking all these kind of questions that nowhere else in the world was asking. Like, what if housing wasn't just where poor people were hidden? What if housing could be beautiful? Social housing, we're talking about. What if working class people deserved courtyards, light, libraries, nurseries, clinics, swimming pools, public services? They built this all into the housing that they were building with. And they also started to rethink how medicine is done and autism is treated and all these things. That may not be the case today, because I have a friend that's gone through the medical system with a autistic son, and apparently it's just as hard as anywhere else to get support. They really have thought about how to redesign society. Like this Karl Marxhof, I don't know if you've ever been there, but to go see it and to get inside, it wasn't just about flats. It was like a real statement, this huge building. It's massive. It's worth going to see it. It goes for blocks. It was like, it kind of brought dignity to the masses, right? Whereas social housing before was kind of like hovels where people had to go. And then there was things like the Vienna Circle, where philosophers, mathematicians, scientists of all kinds that were trying to clean up thought itself, you know. So go check out that Vienna Circle. They were really like, what can we... They were really asking big questions, like, what can we actually know? What is meaningful in life? What is just metaphysical fog? And so... it's repeatedly been producing people or housed people who didn't accept the given rules or didn't accept the norm. And there's no reason why it's not today. Maybe it's like, so if Vienna shrinks people now, is it because the city has always been small? No. Maybe it's because Vienna is haunted by its greatness. It feels like, I don't think that's true. I think that's bullshit. I think it's the weird thing about Vienna. You're not just trying to make something. You're trying to make something in a city where every building seems to whisper, you know, Klimt was here, Freud was here, Mahler was here. I don't know if you guys feel that, but it was a city of great. So I think it can be a city of great inspiration. I think it can be very freeing, and this is one of the reasons I learned about all of this when I was back in Australia. And Vienna's history kind of made me feel like, ah, that's going to be an inspiring place to live, because it has proved to be in the past, and all of these greats have added to it. Yeah, so I think maybe the most Viennese thing, and if you're living here in Vienna and in Austria in general, the most Viennese and Austrian and local thing you can do is piss off the present, is to break the rules. I think this is very Viennese. It's also in their psychology to break rules when they think they're bullshit, when they think they're unjust. When they think they're just, they stick to them. And this is what I think is very cool in Vienna. We live in this, like, we live in a comfort of a city that is safe, that is tolerant, that is all about diversity. I mean, you saw it through the Pride times. Of course, there are a few out there who are loud and shout their xenophobic fears, but these people are simply scared, and fear lives behind their words. And kind of what I'm saying is we shouldn't let fear live behind ours and who we are here. We shouldn't let it anyway. So maybe does Vienna shrink you? Maybe. But I'm kind of wrapping things up here. Maybe Vienna doesn't shrink everyone. Maybe it compresses them, you know? And compression can either flatten you or turn you into something stronger. I'm not going to say a diamond because that's too kitsch for me. But you get what I mean. I think the trick is not to wait for Vienna to give you permission to be yourself. I don't think it's going to give you permission. I don't think people here give you permission to be yourself. And I think that is very rare. I think that is only in huge cities that have a very special flavor to them. The permission here is like a knock on the table, you know, like the, it's kind of somebody saying, nicht schlecht, kind of thing, not bad. And I think that's a big compliment here. Coming from a country that also says, not bad, mate, when they think they're impressed by something, I think that we can definitely translate to that some of that. So, yeah, until then, maybe you just keep doing your thing. Not because you're brave or anything, neither am I. Just because you don't want to shrink. And I think this is the case for all, anywhere you live. Yeah, I think it's important that you just be that donkey with one direction and with the blinkers on, and use the no and the negative stuff that comes out here as a kick up the ass. And don't feel like a guest here anymore. Like from today, even if you've lived here a week, fucking live like you own the joint. That's even a great way to travel for me. Like I've always been like, I want to travel like I'm a local. I want to walk around the place and people ask me directions. And that requires you to learn just enough German to be able to give directions, right? So to all those that are struggling with this kind of battle that they have with the place where they love it, but they feel like they're shrinking from who they are or who they could be, then here's a very Austrian symbol for you to just be yourself. Who gives a fuck? Anyway, I hope you enjoyed the episode. I would love to hear anybody out there that relates to this and that this resonates with, because I think this conversation can continue and we can be a great support for each other in understanding this whole fucking wild world. And yeah, when you pick up your life and you live in another country where you weren't born, we forget often and we underestimate often that it's a big fucking deal. Like it's not easy. And I think talking about it is just a good thing. So that's why I did this episode. So that's it. Go listen, share the podcast. Like the podcast is free, always will be. If you've got a mate that you think will get a kick out of this, send it over to them. Otherwise, look after yourself. Stay cool in this sweaty, sweaty city or country of ours. And no matter how bad you've got it, according to the Viennese, they've got it worse. Bussi and Papa. The Worst Guide to Living in Austria is a Worst Agency production, hosted by Jacob Moss and Gabriel Schascher Schaffler. It's dropped every Monday and available everywhere you get your podcasts.